What's up, gentlemen? This is Rising Phoenix Podcast, a podcast about how to rise up after your divorce. I'm your host, divorce coach, Michael Rhodes. Let's get into it. Joining me today is David Hanscom. David, let's just jump right into it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So yeah, I'm an orthopedic spine surgeon. I practiced complex spine surgery for about 32 years in Seattle, Washington. I took a four-year break to go to Sun Valley, Idaho for some personal reasons. And during my career, spine surgery is considered one of the most stressful aspects of spine surgery because you're dealing with big moves over delicate structure and there's no room for error. And so you're always on a razor's edge every time you walk in the operating room. So stress is a big issue. That in medicine, we're not given many stress management skills. And what happens when you're in constant stress, the way we get through it is just suppressing it, bring it on, I can take it. If we felt stressed out, we thought we were wimps. And so I get sick. I developed 17 different physical and mental symptoms over about 15 years. And it culminated in a panic attack in 1990, driving over the 520 bridge in Seattle, Washington. It was about 10 o'clock at night. I was coming back from a spine meeting that I had organized, and I had a panic attack. So I went from being this absolutely fearless spine surgeon, my attitude was bring it on, to a panic attack. And from that point on, for the next 15 years, I could not put that back in the hole. I had endless panic, more panic attacks. I started developing severe anxiety. I thought anxiety was a psychological issue. I went into counseling. And the more I talked about it, the worse that it got. Mm. By the time I get into the mid-1990s, that was 1990 when that happened. By the time I get into the mid-1990s, I developed a full-blown, what's called an obsessive-compulsive disorder, which is manifested by repetitive thoughts. And it turns out that OCD is considered untreatable. I am now fine. Took me a long time to figure out how it started, how to end it. Mm. And it turns out these repetitive thought patterns are a big problem. There's actually a lot of research on repetitive thought patterns. We call them repetitive unpleasant thoughts or ruts. And on my 17 different symptoms, I had migraine headaches, my ears were ringing, my feet were burning, my stomach was a mess, my back pain hurt, I developed allergies, and they are all gone. It turns out that when your body's in fight or flight physiology, the sensation you develop is anxiety. So it turns out anxiety is a physiological problem, not a psychological problem. And the reason why that's so significant, as long as your body is fired up, it fires up the immune system, which fires up the brain itself. The brain itself becomes inflamed. So the word that humans use for this fight or flight response is anxiety. Well, the problem treating that psychologically is that this physiological response, your body processes about 20 to 40 million bits of information per second. Heart rate, blood pressure, temperature, pupil dilation, all these things happen automatically. Guess how much your conscious brain processes? So your unconscious brain processes between 20 to 40 million bits of information per second. What do you think the conscious brain processes?
Much less, I would say, but I don't know.
40.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
So it's a million times stronger. And so it's like trying to stop. You can't control anxiety and anger because they're automatic hardwired survival responses. We have no control, zero. But we can regulate. So it's like trying to stop an 11,000 horsepower dragster with bicycle handbrakes. You can't do it. But what human consciousness does, it gives you the steering wheel. You can direct it, you can regulate it, you can react to it differently. But the actual response is simply a chemical reaction. So by placing anxiety into a psychological bucket, it's a complete mismatch. We're using your conscious brain to control this massive unconscious survival response, and it doesn't work. We'll work backwards on this for a second, but coming back to your topic about going through divorce or family issues, I had a marked increase in my symptoms when my son was born. So having major family changes makes a huge impact.
Sure.
And what happens, we're busy, busy, busy. All of a sudden you have a human being in your arms that you have to deal with. So let's start the cascade off of these crazy thought patterns. And then I went through a divorce in the middle part of the 1990s, which makes things way worse. This is why I slipped into a full-blown obsessive compulsive disorder. So it turns out that stress is an issue. Turns out that your stress is simply threat physiology. And when I say the word physiology, it means how the body functions. And so when you're in threat physiology, your brain's inflamed, your metabolism is up, you have inflammatory cytokines throughout your entire body. I mean, your whole body's on high alert.
Yeah.
So it turns out that that high alert status, that your brain interprets your internal body signals, and that translates into ruminating thoughts. So it turns out just the way human consciousness works, that everybody has some level of ruminating thoughts. It's universal, just the way language works. And a lot of people, not a big deal, but under stress, the more inflamed your brain, the worse the thought patterns. Because what happens is that, again, your consciousness is interpreting your unconscious brain, transmitting that into thoughts, transmits into actions. So again, these thought patterns are a physiological response, not psychological. And so,
hang on a sec, because I want to, I'm a simple fella, and I know I don't want to assume my audience is simple, but I'm simple. So I need to stop so we can sort of allow me to understand. So your unconscious is dealing with all kinds of things. You said, I forget the number, 40 million or something.
20 to 40 million.
So you're dealing with all kinds of things on in the background, so to speak, right? And it influences the foreground, your conscious, in ways that you don't really understand. You don't even catch. You're not aware of, right? And so you are influenced in ways and affected by things that you're not even really fully conscious of, and thus it can be difficult for us, the way to solve these things that we're not aware of is to think about them, because that's one of the few tools that we're given in life, taught, I should say, right? We're not taught typically any other way. So our answer to these in a way unknown stresses is to think about things. Is that a pretty dumbed down way to describe
it?
Well,
no, you're very, very close. And I think you're basically right, but I want to sort of work on that just a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's lots of theories of human consciousness. So at the end of the day, I'm not particularly attached to a given theory. We don't really know what human consciousness is.
Yeah.
But we do know that a lot of thoughts are formed by interpreting your body's internal sensations. The word is called interoception. So if you're hungry, your brain interprets your stomach being empty, and your brain puts that word on it, hunger. Now, my cat doesn't have language, so she just seeks food. Well, we have words to describe our sensations. So we say hunger or full bowel, bladder, et cetera.
Right.
So our conscious brain is interpreting your internal sensations to survive. Mm-hmm. So if you feel safe and content, so you have basically, as far as physiology, you have fight or flight and you have safety. So you need fight or flight to survive. Again, humans use a word called anxiety to look at that category of reactions.
Yep.
So every day we're in fight or flight different times of the day. But like any athlete or athletic event, you have to rest in order to fight another day. So we know that chronic stress drains the body. So, you know, with a marathon runner, if the runner overtrains, he or she breaks down his or her body.
Yep.
Same thing with a power lifter. As you're actually lifting the weights, you're breaking down the muscles. You have to rest for the muscles to regenerate. So same thing with the whole body. We've known for decades that chronic stress tears down the body.
Yeah.
You have increased all sorts of cardiac disease, hypertension, diabetes, obesity, Alzheimer's, anxiety, depression, OCD. All these are connected with chronic stress. So the problem with chronic stress is no time to rest and regenerate. So the essence of all chronic disease, mental and physical, is sustained exposure to what we call threat physiology or fight or flight. And so the way you solve chronic disease is that you decrease time in threat physiology. You're not going to get rid of it. Of course, you wouldn't survive.
Right.
So this sensation we call anxiety is actually a gift. It's how we evolved. It's supposed to be unpleasant. The species of creatures who did not pay attention to this sensation didn't survive.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to being survival of the fittest, we're also survival of the most anxious. Right?
That's profound.
So then the way you solve chronic disease is you decrease time in fight or flight and you increase time in safety. You can't be stuck in safety because actually you lose resilience. You have to be in fight or flight to learn how to take care of yourself. So as you learn how to deal with adversity more quickly and efficiently, you decrease time in threat physiology, you increase time in safety, and people heal. So it turns out this is what has been astounding to me. I thought anxiety was psychological. I was in psychotherapy for 13 years. I got way worse, way worse. And so what happens if you're focused on the problem? There's a term called neuroplasticity. Have you heard of this term?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Covered
Okay, your
many
brain's
times.
incredibly adaptable. And so wherever you place your tension is where you're going to develop your brain. So if you're talking about, if your mind is trying to fix, 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 you're tension on the problem, not the solution. So I just want to drop back to the reason why we're here today as far as divorce, et cetera. So there's a word called triggered, which is a pretty familiar word. Anytime you're anxious or frustrated, something in the present, something in the past came into the present moment. So your brain memorizes everything, everything. You may not know it, but you don't have to touch a hot stove twice to realize that this is a dangerous thing. You don't have to get almost hit by a car to actually not look both ways crossing the street. So a brain memorizes everything. What's safe, what's not safe? How do you navigate life? And so it's unconsciously memorizing everything. And of course, if it's repeated, it gets sort really embedded in your brain. So when you go back and analyze all these survival mechanisms, you're reinforcing them. So with families are the deepest triggers because the patterns of survival came from your family. And a lot of the behaviors we learned were not very functional behaviors. A lot of us had bad family backgrounds, and so we don't model good relationships. My first marriage ended up in divorce, and I just didn't know how to do relationships. Nobody taught me how to do this. So your spouses or partners are your biggest triggers and your kids. When I say triggered, it means you get anxious and frustrated and reactive. And when you're in this reactive mode, your brain goes from the thinking brain to the limbic brain. In other words, when you're in fight or flight, the neocortex or the thinking brain decreases its blood supply. It's not that you don't want to do the right thing, you actually can't. You don't have physiological access to your thinking brain, hence domestic violence. So when you're in a limbic system or angry mode, the blood flow is shifted from your thinking brain to your survival brain. And so anger is destructive. Anger is also a physiological state. In other words, anxiety is a physiological state. It causes you to solve the problem, causing the anxiety so you survive. But what if you can't escape the problem? You kick in a more intense physiological response, you become angry. So anxiety and anger are the same thing. They're both chemical states. But the problem is when you're angry, it's a survival reaction that's intended to be destructive, and it is. So think about the last time you actually solved an argument when you were angry.
That doesn't exist.
So I'll just ask a rhetorical question. Why? I mean, it seems you're both intense, you're both making your point. Why can't you solve your problem when you're angry? And the problem is that your thinking brain is offline. You actually have less blood flow to your brain, to the thinking part of your brain. So you're in the limbic system. So it's reaction versus reaction versus reaction. So it's not like it's not like that you don't want to solve the problem. You actually can't.
So I want to step back a little bit, because again, I want to make sure that I'm understanding it and also that it's translating, because again, I'm a simple fella. So let's focus on the anxiety piece of this
Okay.
and thinking about things. So you're anxious because you have to do either a pickup, let's say a pickup of the kids. You got to go pick up the kids and you know you got to deal with her, and that's very anxious. It could be anger too, but I want to focus on anxiousness. It could be a very anxious thing. And so then you know that that's coming, so you're going to be in an anxious state of mind. And maybe you have a couple of hours or even a day or whatever. And so you're thinking about this thing over and over and over. And and it doesn't do anything but reinforce how bad it is, right? It doesn't, right. There's no solution there. And so then what do you do? And I think I know the answer to this because it's something I do coach guys and I teach guys, and I've been doing this for a long time. So, but what do you do when you're in that anxious state and you can't get out of it, and all you're doing is thinking and thinking? You call it a rut, you know, ruminating thoughts.
Right.
How do you get out of that? How do you even realize you're in it?
So I'm going to say, make a simple answer, then I'm going to give you a solution, which I can't talk about today. In other words, so you calm down the nervous system, you calm down the physiology. So I call it the eye of the storm. Is that I had a metaphor. I was watching Hurricane Gustav come into New Orleans years ago. I'm looking at the wind spinning around, and the metaphor hit me. Well, the wind represents your circumstances and your thoughts. You can't control most of your circumstances, and you certainly cannot control your thoughts. And so there's a series of tools to literally calm down your physiology to pull yourself into the center of the storm. Mm-hmm. So regardless of the circumstances, you get pulled in, but then you have the tools to pull back into the center.
Yes.
So you can't stop a hurricane. You can't stop your thoughts. You can't control most of your circumstances. So there's a ways of actually calming the physiology down that allows the problem to stop. But the metaphor that's hit me really hard, because these repetitive thought patterns are considered unsolvable, because we're using logic. We're using a million to one ratio mismatch to try to solve the problem. A metaphor I like to use is that of a hornet's nest. So hornets are doing their job, making a nest, gathering food, reproducing, et cetera. They're buzzing around, scouring the landscape for food, et cetera, looking for danger. And then someone comes along and shakes the hornet's nest. Right. What happens? So the hornets represent your thoughts. The nest represents your nervous system. So the hornets are out there buzzing around. They're angry. So what we're doing is we're fighting bad thoughts with good thoughts. We're trying to fight the hornets outside of the nest. The real answer is quit shaking the nest. As long as the nest is being shaken, as long as your brain itself is inflamed, by the way, half the brain is inflammatory cells. Half the brain consists of what's called glial cells, which are inflammatory. So your brain itself is inflamed. So as long as your brain is inflamed, you're not going to stop the hornets from being angry. So there's four parts of dealing with repetitive, unpleasant thoughts. I call them ruts. And they're universal, and it's been well documented that under stress, quick question, let's take the word stress and stop there for a second.
Sure.
So I've always been taught that if I felt stressed, I was sort of a wimp. I wasn't tough enough.
Yep.
And we look at stress in terms of psychology, right? We think stress is a psychological construct. But think about it. You have circumstances that are threatening or dangerous. Your body reacts. So the stress is your threats, and your body's response is what it is. It's powerful. It can keep you alive. So stress, again, is a physiological situation. It's not psychological. So again, every living creature has to deal with challenges. And so when you're stressed, your body's actually doing its job. But again, is the sustained stress is what wears you down.
Right.
So just to be really clear, thoughts, unpleasant thoughts, are a stress that we can't control. That's input. Then you have your nervous system itself that's processing the input. Then your output is what I call a physiology, and that's what you feel. Those are your emotions. So thoughts, unpleasant thoughts, are input. Your emotions reflect your physiology. It's what you feel. So we have a model called dynamic healing, where you have the input nervous system and the output. Every living creature has to assess its circumstances and adapt to it. So you have all the sensory input coming in, and then your nervous system is dealing with it and saying you're safe or not safe. And if you don't feel safe, your body puts out chemicals that say fight or flight. Or if you feel safe, well, your body goes, I feel fine. So whether it's 500 years ago or yesterday, if your body is in a safety state, you feel content, relaxed, you feel good. And so in threat physiology, your body's full of adrenaline, cortisol, inflammatory cytokines, excitatory neurotransmitters, and we feel safe. You have anti-inflammatory cytokines. You're putting fuel back into the cells. Your body goes to a calming acetylcholine neurotransmitters. I mean, you feel good when you feel safe. So the number one factor that every living creature wants, including humans, is feeling safe. And when you don't feel safe, you can do anything you need to do to feel safe, which means a lot of times means power and control. In other words, the more power you have, the more control you have, the more you feel safe. So that's what's become so dysfunctional about our human race is that we can't escape our thoughts. We do not feel safe from our thoughts. So we suppress them. And it's been well shown that suppressing thoughts actually fires up the nervous system even more than actually thinking the thoughts. So you have the negative thoughts coming in, again, the input, nervous system, and the output. We call it dynamic healing. You can change the way you process the input. You can increase the resiliency of the nervous system. There's ways of directly lowering the threat physiology. And it's through all three of those portals that you can work. So this is not a formulaic answer. So I did put a process together called DOC Journey, Direct Your Own Care Journey. There's a computer-based course. There's also an app. So the two parts to healing are, how do I want to frame this simply? I don't want to try to explain the whole thing because it's not difficult, but there's many layers to it.
Sure, sure.
Let me give you the most simplistic explanation, but the form, it's not a formulaic approach, but it's understanding the concepts in order to find your solution. So I'm going to frame it one way first, and I'll frame it another way second. You can stop me.
Gotcha.
So there's two parts to healing. One of them is you learn to live with your threat physiology. Since it occupies every cell in our body, we tend to think that's who we are. We identify with these unpleasant sensations. And the problem is the more of a well-intentioned person you are, the worse the problem, because these sensations are intended to be incredibly unpleasant, despicable, guilt-producing, shameful, whatever, but they're survival sensations. So it's what you have to survive. It's not who you are. So separating your identity from the survival sensations is a big deal.
So when you say survival sensations, what are those kind of, what are those things? Anger, anxiety, is that what you're talking about?
Humans have words. So one thing we try to do is get rid of the word anxiety and anger, just saying my threat physiology is activated. And when you get angry, it's hyperactivated. In both situations, you're actually in the past. You're not in the present moment.
True.
So again, these massive chemical reactions are what you have to survive. They're a gift. So anytime you're anxious or frustrated or angry, you're in survival mindset. And by the way, your thinking brain, by the way, is not working that well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we use like words like guilt and shame and all these negative words to describe these sensations, but they're just words. And they're just reactions. And so you can't take them personally. So as you learn to separate yourself from these things, which takes practice, by the way, I call it developing a working relationship with your survival reactions. So you can't get rid of them. I mean, you couldn't cross the street without having a survival reaction. And so there's a wordplay that I use where you're alert, you're nervous, you're afraid, become angry, paranoid, and terrorized. And so there's different levels of the stress chemistry. So one exercise I have my people do is to visualize a very large thermometer on the opposite wall. And you feel a little bit nervous why that thermometer is a little bit high. If you're really just furious, the thermometer is higher.
Sure.
Of course, terrorized, you're through the roof.
Right.
So what you do, well, let me ask you a rhetorical question. So anxiety and anger are automatic hardwired survival reactions. You cannot control them. There's nothing you can do. So if anxiety is a sensation generated by this threat physiology, how do you lower anxiety?
Well, so for me, and I think this is probably the core of what you teach as well, is it's really about managing, right? And first is being aware, okay, I'm anxious right now. And then dropping into your body to soothe your mind, so you can bring yourself back into your prefrontal cortex, right? And to get right back into logical thinking brain. Right. All easier said than done. But I think that's essentially what we have to be aware, right? And then we have to take action to get us back online, so to speak, or at least our logical brain back online.
Yeah, that's an incredibly good answer. I don't usually get that clear of an answer. You're perfect. So yeah, what you do, you regulate the physiology. You just lower the physiology. So again, the two parts of healing, you learn to work with your survival physiology. It's what you have, it's not who you are. So it's there every day. There's no time you conquer anxiety or anger. Then the other half of the equation, which is a separate but linked skill, is nurturing joy, which is good food, good wine, good friends, spiritual journey. Play is a profound shift in body chemistry. So the real antidote to pain is play. But if you use play to outrun the circuits, it shows that a hedonistic lifestyle is actually inflammatory. So you have to allow yourself to feel the pain, regulate the pain, be with it. Then when you get yourself, like you said nicely, when you get your brain back online, then you choose joy. When you're anxious and frustrated, you have no choice because your thinking brain's not working. So the way you heal is, so I'm going to reframe it a little bit differently again, is a just take the metaphor of a tree, where is the roots are connection, the trunk is confidence, and the branches are creativity. So the bottom line is connection is really key. In other words, instead of trying to analyze and study your past, can you just be with your past? Just be with it. And with the only question being, what can I learn from my past to help me move forward? Specifically with relationships, what was my role in this divorce that I can learn from to move forward? So just being with your family programming, your own programming, what happened in this relationship that was a problem. And remember, as long as you're blaming the other person, you're in fight or flight. And so the massive tipping point with healing every time is anger. And the essence of anger is blame. So the genealogy of anger is circumstance, blame, victim, anger. So if you want to blame your ex-partner or spouse for what's going on, then you're in a victim role and you're always anxious and frustrated. So how can you interact with this person that you used to love in a meaningful way if both of your brains are offline? Can't do it. It's actually physiologically not possible to stay angry and actually be connected to the present moment. So you'd use the word awareness. How aware are you when you are angry? Zero.
I mean, not initially for sure, because it's such,
No,
like you
it's
said,
zero.
it's a lightning click. Yeah, it's quick.
It's zero. You're reacting. It's a reaction, right? So I'm going to give you one of the tools that we work with. So again, let's go back to the dynamic healing model. So the goal is to decrease threat physiology, increase safety, but you can't negotiate if you're in threat. So we have a little, I call it 5-3-2 strategy. Again, it's circumstance, blame, victim, anger. Your families are the deepest triggers by far. 90% of people, 90% of people, by the way, in chronic pain, mental or physical, again, they're the same thing, where you are in fight or flight, you can't think correctly, and you're trapped. 90% of people in pain are still angry at the person who injured them in the first place. There's a lot of people still angry at their mothers and fathers 30 years later.
Or
So
20.
again, that's a whole different topic, but what you do with the dynamic healing model, we call it 5-3-2. So the first five words are no action in a reaction. So remember, there's the issue that started it. So you have the reaction and the problem, and you can't solve the problem till, like you said, you get your brain back online. So no matter what happens, you feel the courage of your convictions, you're blaming that person, she did, or he or she did this, this, and this. Well, the reality is it's you. There's a book out I would highly recommend to your group called The Way to Love. Dr. Anthony DeMello is a Jew, a priest, and he has a chapter here called Thank Your Enemies. And he's a lot of people don't like him because he's truly blunt. He's one of the most brilliant writers of all time. I give this to book to everybody, people I work with, my fellows, my administrators, myself. It was given to me by my sports coach. And he, bottom line, he wrote a book called Awareness. Anytime you're anxious or frustrated, you aren't aware. You're just not here because you're in the past, right? But the essence of human relationships is being aware. So he points out when you're angry, you actually learn to thank the person who angered you because you're responsible for your anger. That person triggered you. They actually just gave you a gift.
Yep.
So it's hard to do because it still feels like that other person.
Yeah.
So the first step is no action and a reaction. Five words. So, okay, you just pissed me off. Maybe a minute, maybe 10 minutes, maybe a week before you start to calm down.
Yep.
But while you're in that agitated threat physiology, just don't say anything, do anything, just get out of the room. Anger is only destructive. It's a survival reaction. It's only destructive.
Agreed.
The second three words, you call it flip the switch. So people, to me, the word forgiveness is the right concept, but it's too big of a word.
Mm-hmm.
So it's addicting. It has dopamine. It feels powerful. It is powerful. Why would you ever want to give it up? I don't want to give it up. And I spent years trying to get on top of anger to give it up. I would be very upset about getting upset. The reality is it's a survival reaction that I have no control over. So, okay, let's say you irritated me for some reason. And so let's just go deeper than that. Let's say I had an abusive mother. I mean, it was bad. So why do I want this person who treated me badly in my life today? Or somebody really cut you off in traffic, or they cheated you on a tax return or something. This person's a bad person. They didn't help you out. So why do I want that person in my life today? And maybe your partner or spouse did treat you badly. And so why do you want that person in your life today? So I call it flipping the switch. Anger is so powerful, so addicting. You just say, okay, I'm tired of being a victim. I'm simply going to switch directions and go a different direction. So it's a positive choice. It's not positive thinking. It's not trying to rationalize it. And you've already noted when you are in an angry mode, your brain starts spinning like crazy. So again, you can't stop the thoughts, but you can calm down the hornet's nest. So as you flip the switch, it is remarkable. When I finally realized that I'm going to be angry off and on the rest of my life changed. Like, I'm triggered. I'm angry. I don't like this person, but I don't want them to ruin my day.
True.
So just in a millisecond, I go flip the switch. So five words, no action and a reaction. When you calm down enough to flip the switch, don't flip the switch until you mean it internally. So
in terms of flipping the switch from anger, is it an opposite? And what is that? Like, what is the opposite of anger? Is it love? Or like, what are you flipping the switch to with anger just specifically?
The final two words is move on. Just get on with your day. So the trouble is, if you try to contrive love to feel better about this person, that's where this falls apart.
Yeah.
So we want to generate some love and compassion for this person who's just a jerk. You don't have to like this person.
Right.
So we call it flipping the switch, just bam, switch directions. But the final two words, which is actually the solution, is move on.
Mm.
So as you get involved with your day, that's where your brain goes. Mm. So no action, reaction, flip the switch, move on. So I guess segue here for a second. I just want to go back to the tree, the connection, confidence, and creativity. So learning to be with your past is really critical. So let's say you're in the past and you get triggered. The trunk of the tree is confidence. So the confidence is the tools to regulate your physiology back into safety from fight or flight. And it comes in all sorts of different forms. You can address the input, the nervous system, and the output. Again, the dynamic healing model. And so once you have the confidence to actually navigate this unpleasant set of physiology, then the healing occurs at the top of the tree, which is the branches in creativity. So you're developing neurological circuits away from the unpleasant survival circuits. It's like learning a new language. You're not going to learn French by not speaking English. You're not going to learn this enjoyable life by trying to fix your survival circuits. And so I have a little saying that to have a good life, to have a good life, you have to live a good life. It takes practice.
Mm-hmm.
So I call it becoming a professional at navigating adversity and nurturing joy. And so you now have the capacity to navigate anything. So that's where the confidence comes in. So people, let's go back to divorce again for a second, which I think is one of the worst things on this planet.
Yeah, amen, it
flipped me into a full-blown OCD. Because I was angry, frustrated. I knew nothing about this. So I spent 15 years in this hole. That's a really long time. I almost committed suicide in 2002. And of all the different 17 physical and mental symptoms I had, the repetitive thoughts were the worst. I could not escape my thoughts. And there's a direct link, research link, between ruminations and suicide.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I know. I've seen it.
But
Yeah.
in other mammals don't commit suicide. I mean, if it's an animal sick and die sick, might give up and sort of commit suicide and just give up. But that's with unrelenting physical threats. But animals don't have abstract thinking and language like humans do. And these thoughts are processed in a similar manner as physical threats. We don't like to hurt. So emotional pain is actually more devastating than physical pain. Because with physical pain, we have an automatic withdrawal response. With mental pain, how do we protect ourselves from mental pain? There's none. There's no protection from mental pain. So again, with physical pain, we have an automatic withdrawal response that allows us to navigate the planet so we don't physically damage ourselves. But human consciousness is relatively new, and actually very new in the course of human evolution. What's your protection from mental pain? None.
Yeah. I know people try to like drink it away. Sex.
Right.
I mean, everything, but facing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you can't really face it either. In other words, you how do you say this? So you can't conquer it. So let's go back to the hornet's nest.
Yeah.
So there's four. So let's just review one thing. Okay. So you have the connection to the past. In other words, awareness, and understand when you're anxious or frustrated, you're not in the present. Then you have the trunk of the tree, which is the tools to regulate your physiology. So again, you develop this working relationship with your physiology. It's what you have, not who you are. Then the real healing is spiritual journey, good food, good wine, good friends, gratitude. That's how you develop neurological circuits away from the circuits. And that's what's exciting for me, because when you're in safety physiology, you not only get better, you start thriving at a level you never knew was even possible. So you don't have the survival mentality all the time. You can't outrun these circuits. You can't fix them. You can't conquer them. But as you learn to separate from them and move forward, the two parts of healing are connecting and regulating the stress physiology, and the other half is nurturing joy. That's where your brain will develop through neuroplasticity. And there's lots of ways of doing that. So as far as these obsessive thought patterns, which are just brutal, again, there's a direct link between these thought patterns and suicide.
Yeah.
And people say, well, I don't have OCD. Okay, fine. I happen to have the worst part of it was OCD, but a lot of people are ruminating repetitive thoughts.
I hear about it all the time for guys.
Just the way the brain works.
Yep.
So it's been known forever that when your brain's inflamed, these thoughts become worse.
Yeah.
And if you look at how thoughts are formed, again, go to the hornet's nest analogy. We're out there trying to fight good thoughts. I mean, sorry, bad thoughts with good thoughts.
Right.
It's not going to work, right?
Yeah.
So the four parts of healing is number one. I call it thought separation. You can't control your thought. And that's why I use this little thing called active meditation in the article, is that
yes.
When you use active meditation, you have these racing thoughts, and you're not doing to distract yourself. You're simply shifting your attention to something different. So like just for a second, sit back in your chair, feel your chair, drop your shoulders. Okay, you're just on a different sensation.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of fighting the thought, you simply taste your food. I call it active meditation. It's 3 to 5 seconds all day long. It does not take extra time out of your day. You just calm down. And pretty soon over 3 to 6 months, it becomes very automatic. You just start connecting with what's right in front of you. So you've heard the phrase, be here now. Well, if I'm connected to taste, or I'm connected to this chair, I'm connected talking to you, I am here now.
Sure.
If my mind's racing about the past or the future, I'm not here. So I call it active meditation, so we connect into the present moment. So I've separated from my thoughts. My thoughts are doing this over here, and I'm here connected to a physical sensation. I simply shifted gears. Another way of separating from your thoughts, we call it expressive writing. You simply write down the actual thoughts on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts are in the paper. You're here. You've now separated from those. And you've now connected that with vision and feel, which is part of your unconscious brain. So expressive writing is a really basic tool. Again, none of these are solutions, but they are starting points.
Yep.
So the first step is, and by the way, these all occur simultaneously. It's not like you do this, this, and this. This all becomes automatic.
Right.
So the second part of it is to calm down the physiology. And again, I'm not going to go into that today. I just talked about that 5-3-2-1 tool. But again, you can readjust the way you process stress, the input. You can calm down the nervous system with diet, sleep, and exercise. And you can directly lower the physiology with humming, breath work, et cetera. There's a bunch of ways to lower the physiology. But what the dynamic healing model does, it gives you a bunch of ways of lowering threat physiology. So you've now calmed down the nervous system. So again, thought separation, calming the nervous system. The third step is creativity, which we just talked about. You start going this direction, not to distract yourself. And again, with active meditation, simply shifted sensory input, you're not distracting yourself because you get to feel the pain. You say, okay, enough of that. I'm going to go here. You might do that 100 to 200 times a day or even more often. It's just a matter of just the way you live your life is very connected to the present moment. Then the final step, which is beyond this conversation, is you understand that these thoughts are just distortions. They're a function of your threat physiology. You quit taking them seriously. And one reason we all develop self-esteem and ego is to feel better about ourselves, right?
True.
So when you, but think about this, most of our self-esteem and ego is based on what we should or should not do, right?
True. Yep.
It's a massive, what we call cognitive distortion. They're just stories.
Yes.
So what happens, we develop these stories about ourselves, self-esteem, ego, in order to feel better about the threat physiology. Once you learn to work with it, not take it personally, you actually don't need an ego. Sounds crazy a little bit, but your ego starts to dissolve. You don't need it anymore. And it's a huge breakthrough. So again, these repetitive thought patterns are considered unsolvable in the mental health world. The reason why this has been missed so badly, and this is a whole different conversation, is that they miss the physiology.
Sure. Yeah.
They put anxiety into a psychological bucket, not the physiological state. So I would encourage your listeners to say, look, this is very solvable, way more solvable than you think. It's not about finding a new partner. And again, some other podcasts, I'm happy. I spent the last 2 years in my practice dealing with just family issues. So talk therapy doesn't work, just doesn't work. And what I realized at one point, talk therapy is, if I talk about this situation in detail enough, I don't want you to piss me off again, is what you're really saying. So all this talk is way overrated. It's way overrated. So calming, learning each party to learn self-calming tools. And by the way, my wife is better at this than I am. I have to confess. I mean, since I don't want to sound preachy here. I'm in the same human boat you are. So
yeah,
my wife, fortunately, is on the same pathway. And I trigger the hell out of her. She triggers the hell out of me. But we both understand, okay, we're triggered. And so we have lots of things that are positive. And so again, we learn to put the triggers over here. And then I get triggered last night. Again, it's never going to stop. But I could have, 10 years ago, it could have lasted for a day. It lasted for about half an hour. So you just learn self-regulation skills. Then you choose to nurture joy together, it's a whole different ballgame than trying to fix all the problems.
Yeah,
so
I think,
again,
I
there's
think
a structure around relationships that really makes a huge difference to actually calm the physiology down.
I think that's one of the keys, like this whole outlook of like not taking it personal, or I'm not a fan of that phrasing. That's just because I'm a very emotional guy and I've heard that all my life. And sometimes it makes me, but in your context, it makes much more sense. But it's not about not.
Well, can I stop you there just for a second?
Yeah, sure.
That is the problem with current treatments of these thought patterns. So they talk about, well, here's your monkey mind, here's your rational mind, right?
Sure.
Okay, then you start analyzing, well, this is monkey, this is rational. Again, you're fighting the hornets out of the nest. So you're simply working on calming your emotions down by regulating the physiology. That's it. And with the other part with the thoughts is, remember, it's thought separation, not trying to fix the thoughts. So you quit shaking the nets, the hornets get bored and come back to the nest. So by trying to address the thoughts is monkey mind versus this, I did that for 15 years. And I have one young person I work with severe intrusive thought patterns for about 15 years. And once he learned how to address the physiology, within 3 months, he was fine. They disappeared. I was shocked. He was shocked. It took me years to figure this out, years to come out of it. I've helped many people out of it. So I'm now figuring out actually what is the core pathway of actually getting people out of these patterns relatively quickly. I still have a lot to learn. So I'm writing a book called On Ruts, Repetitive Unpleasant Thoughts. My process, again, instead of going a lot more detail today, I have a process called the DLC Journey, Direct Your Own Care Journey. It's on the internet. And so there's an app based on my wife's course, really done nicely. And I have a computer-based course called the DLC Journey. And the idea is to spend maybe 10 or 15 minutes a day just learning the skills, because just learning about pain is not going to solve it. So you learn the concepts, then it's practice, practice, practice. And again, it's like becoming a professional baseball player. It takes practice.
Yeah.
And so repetition, repetition. So the emphasis is on the skill set, not solving the problem. So I get increasing skills to learn how to navigate adversity and nurture joy. You spend less time in threat physiology, increase time in safety. The body not only heals, it regenerates. People's skin changes. Their body language changes. Their voice changes. Their thinking, their brain actually re-expands. I mean, you're actually changing the structure of your brain. So in safety physiology, your body knows how to regenerate and heal, and way beyond what any of us can do. I say, look, this, and I always tell people, look, this is not about believing David Hanscom. In fact, I encourage you not to believe anything I said today, nothing. Well, I'm telling you, I dug into the science. I went through it myself. My contribution is interpreting the science in a way that's accessible, but this is your journey, your style, your way. So these are concepts that allow you to figure out your own way out of this hole.
Yeah, agreed.
So anyway, between the book, Back in Control, wrote a book, and the website, it's a very self-directed process. Then I have probably too many other resources, because I don't think people should spend too much time on this. But the bottom line is you spend 10 or 15 minutes a day on the app or the course. But you spend an hour a day total just overall looking at how to learn more about this thing. Then the rest of the day, you just practice, practice, practice. I cannot give you information to solve the disputes with your spouse or wife or partner. I cannot give you information how to, quote, solve anxiety and solve anger. Yeah. I can teach you tools on how to just take care of yourself.
Yeah. So a couple things. I mean, there's a lot of things. My goodness. It's simple in a lot of ways, but it's also so very complex in other ways, because there's so many parts of it and so many layers and so many experiences that people have of their own, and they bring their own shit to the table, and they're like, but what about this way? So one of the things I think that I think is absolutely a wonderful piece of advice, because this is foreign to us, right? It's not right. Something taught, and it's not a quick, like if I dropped into my body, to learn how to soothe myself, you know, I would immediately back into intrusive thoughts, right? And so I have to go, all right, let's go. Here we go again. I got to go. So it's absolutely takes practice. But one of the things I think that makes divorce so difficult, and thank you so much for, you know, sharing your story at least a little bit. I think we'll do another episode, and at least many probably, I feel like, and one of them will be a little bit more about your story. But when you have children, and you have to, and I was having a conversation with my best friend Chris today about this, you have to still be around that person that triggers you, right? You have to interact with this person that caused all of this, you know, that set all this into motion, right? And so
wrong. I'd be a little bit facetious here, but just remember, go to Demela's work. That person is your opportunity to practice. You don't
It's a great, I don't disagree. It's a great way to look at it.
You have to be around that person. You get to be around that person. This is my chance to practice. So I'm trying to become a professional baseball player. I want to field the ground balls. I want to catch the fly balls. I want to get up at the plate as often as I can. So if I don't practice, I'm not going to learn. So again, that's what DeMille says so eloquently.
Yeah. I wrote that one down. I'm buying it as soon as we hang up. I'm going to go to the bookstore.
Love your enemies.
It's pretty profound.
It's profound. I mean, I tell you, this book changed my life.
Well,
so I mean, I guess I don't believe David Hanscom. These concepts have been around for centuries.
Yeah.
I feel fortunate to be here. Number one, I almost didn't survive. Sam, I feel fortunate to be able to interpret in a way that other people can understand it. And again, I'd love to, again, talk with you over time, because I would encourage you to jump onto the doc journey.
Oh,
and go
yeah,
through the
no,
process.
absolutely.
But within 3 to 6 months, you'll see some changes. But what I need help with is what can I say or what parts of the journey were helpful for you? So my personal challenge now is there's so much data and so many things to do. But let me go back to simple for a second. Okay, you have stress physiology. You go from fight or flight to safety. And it can happen. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but I've had people get better in 2 weeks because they reconnected with play, which is in everybody's how we developed is play. So when you're in a play physiology, it's a profound shift in your body's chemistry, and the thoughts drop down, the pain disappears often, anxiety drops way down. But how much anxiety do you have when you're actually truly at play? None.
Zero. Yeah,
Zero.
zero. Yeah.
Right. So it's not that hard in a way. And actually, the tools aren't very hard. The hardest part by far, is the paradigm shift of fixing versus creating. So what you have to do, you learn to work with this, but you have to let go. So the letting go is very anxiety producing. And again, this is a different conversation, but remember, anger protects you. Anger protects you from feeling vulnerable or anxious. So there's a really tricky phase as you start dropping the anger. You might develop some overwhelming anxiety. So that's where the skills come in to be able to be with the anxiety, not react to it. Because if you try not to react to it, you're actually paying more attention to it. So I mean, it's very paradoxical. So it's not hard, but it's repetition.
You know what's crazy? I think I mean, I feel like over the last four, it's been 4.5 years for me, roughly. And I feel like my anger has lessened and my anxiety has increased 100%. I likened it to I had a new job. I got a new job like 1.5 years ago, and that's really kicked up the anxiety. But I will say that my anger towards her has greatly lessened. It's not always gone, but it's interesting that you say once you lose your anger, you might get a little anxiety. That I know that's true for
Not
me, and maybe that's,
might, you will. You
will.
will. Yeah, because here's the deal. I mean, again, a different conversation, but this is a big problem for the human race. Okay, remember, what are the rewards in the wild for being vulnerable?
No, there's no none.
Zero. Okay, so emotional pain is processed like physical pain. What are the rewards for emotional vulnerability?
Zero,
Zero.
especially for men.
Okay, what's that?
Especially for men.
I think it goes both ways. I think it's just a different version of it. So what I'm saying is that the essence of human relationships is being vulnerable. Yet there's no physical rewards for being vulnerable. We have a big problem as a human race. So as I'm saying, you get the connection, confidence, and creativity. You can't really access creativity until you actually can learn to be vulnerable. That doesn't mean just I can do it, I can do it, toughen it out. So
The right.
again, as you calm down the physiology, remember the way the antidote to anxiety is simply calm the physiology. Talk therapy doesn't work. Just doesn't work.
Yeah, I think I've heard that many times before, and I don't disagree. My reason for telling folks to get talk therapy is not to just talk. It's to get, and I say this all the time, it's like dating. Don't pick the first therapist. I do think that there are therapists that have more of a mindset like you in that I'm going to give you some tools rather than I'm just going to listen to you talk and scribble in my notepad. So I do think that there are good therapists if they are sort of goal oriented or whatever, right? They're trying to give you they're not just trying to be a crutch. They're trying to give you tools in order to not see have to see them anymore. And so I think it has its place. I believe that, but I do think that it is very limited and that there is much more tools available that are better than just simply talking about your problems. Because like you said, it, and I love that you talk about this, that it talking about the problem reinforces the problem because
Right.
it puts it makes the grooves even deeper, so to speak, right? So I agree that ultimately it's not going to solve all your problems to sit around and talk about them for sure. But I do think that
Actually,
there are.
I just be really blunt. I was in psychotherapy for 13 solid years.
Oh,
That's a
I
long time.
did many, many years myself.
And so it actually talk therapy, how do you say this? So you're right, there's a group of therapists, but it's very small
You're true.
that don't that teach you how to feel safe. Talk therapy is contraindicated. Because again, you're talking about the problem. So learning self-regulation skills. So let me put it this way. I'm not trying to sound self-serving here because many people do
No,
this.
I don't think that. No,
Right. So
I totally understand what you're saying.
the pathway I outline is my own experience of thousands of patients have gotten better. So you have a framework to start. Everybody does better with a coach or a psychologist or whoever. So it helps you along. So you can do it by yourself, and it's a self-directed process.
Yes.
But I agree with you that support's really critical, really helpful. So I encourage it. But again, we can talk about that at another time about how you choose a therapist that you need. So again, this is as one of those things. Unfortunately, I got to run here and go to you. But
Yeah.
I think it's one of those conversations. I don't want to sound too blunt on being negative on
No,
psychology
it's
because I
okay.
think brilliant. But it's right now, if you notice, the mental health of our country is getting worse.
Worse, 100%.
There's a whole article now in the New York Times a couple of days ago showing how actually talk therapies is really damaging our mental health. There's a whole thing called mental rigidity. That's a big problem that goes across every psychiatric diagnosis. But let me just finish one thing about the whole psychology part, which I didn't get to. So it turns out anxiety, depression, OCD, bipolar, and schizophrenia are all metabolic inflammatory disorders. They are not psychological, none of them. So Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, cardiac disease, obesity, adult onset diabetes, hypertension, cancer, osteoporosis are all inflammatory metabolic disorders. They're all the same thing. They manifest as different ways, but every one of them have threat physiology that's sustained. So that's where you have to treat everything at once by teaching. So again, we call it cues of safety. Learning how to feel safe is how you heal. At the end of the day, I mean, there's lots of different, there's an infinite number of ways of doing this. And so, but the key issue here are the concepts. So again, healing occurs with creativity and neuroplasticity. That's where it goes. But you cannot do it with positive thinking, which is a way of suppressing negative thinking. But like you pointed out earlier, positive choices, positive choices, positive choices. Once your brain's back online, that's how you change your brain. So I know we covered probably more ground than you wanted to today, and I know
Oh
we both
no,
got
man.
to
This
run
is
here.
I could do this all fucking day. I love this shit, man. I think it's fascinating. I love different viewpoints. I love people. What I really love is why I love doing what I do is I've lived this shit. And the fact that you had too, that just makes what you say much it carries more weight. No offense to anyone that hasn't been through it, but if you haven't been through it, you don't fucking understand. And you clearly do. So I love it. I could talk about this shit all day long. I appreciate you doing it.
So what I would love to do, I would love to help you personally through this because you've talked to a lot of different people. And I mean, I quit my practice to do this. This is why I
I'm
quit my
game.
practice because I'm seeing so many people thrive at such a level. And so, yeah, I'd love to help you work through it because you obviously talked to a lot of different people. And that's why I'm here is trying to leverage what I know into different forums. So my number one priority every time with everybody is always helping you, and then obviously you can help others.
Yeah,
So
amen. Yeah, that's why I do what I do. So, one more question, the last question I ask everyone, is what words of wisdom would you impart to a man who is just beginning his divorce journey?
just please learn the tools. This is not a one-time positive thinking that I will tell you that I think divorce is maybe one of the worst things the human experience. It's like
Yes.
ripping a deep scab off a body. It's like ripping off a body part. It's even deeper than just ripping off a scab. So understand, so honor your own suffering. Everybody gets to suffer. You aren't the only one. And but honestly, it turns out to be a huge opportunity if you can flip it around. And I always tell my, again, we worked with families almost exclusively in the last 2 years. I said, look, what you need to do is ask one question. What was my role in the relationship coming apart? And what can I do to make the next relationship better? So I've
Amen.
had a fair number of people get back together with their spouses because once you sort of defuse the situation, you have a lot in common. And so, and people, again, a different conversation, but people over and over and over again go back in the same situation they just came out of because you get attracted to your darkest patterns. If you don't know what happened the first time, you're absolutely going to repeat it the second time. And as you know, the divorce rate for second and third marriages is twice and three times as bad as first marriages. Well, why? Because it's taking responsibility for your role. So you have a chance of actually making the next relationship better, which I did, but it wasn't easy. That's a different story.
There.
But anyway, we'll talk.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing this. One more time, let's just cover the website and your books and all that stuff so people can find you.
So my book is Back in Control, A Surgeon's Roadmap About a Chronic Pain. When I wrote the book, I did not realize the impact of mental pain is actually my biggest process right now. And there's a website, backincontrol.com, that it's all my resources. My two main resources besides the book Back in Control are the DOC Journey, Direct Your Own Care Journey app and course. And it's about 15 minutes a day on each one. And just, again, it gives you a sequence of skills for you. Again, it's not formulaic. I also coach twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays at noon for an hour in a group to answer lots of questions there. And so I'm not in practice, so I can't give medical advice. But again, the coaching in addition to one of the courses of the app has been really wonderful. We've had the best time.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for doing this. I really, really appreciate it. We will definitely stay in touch. I'll send you an email later today and see how we can do some more work together. And I'll definitely keep you posted. It'll probably be a few weeks before this one's out, but I'll let you know. So again, thank you so very much for doing this. I appreciate it.
All right. You're welcome.
All right, take care. Thank you so much for watching and or listening. Since my separation in July of 2019, I have done an incredible amount of work on myself. I've had many different therapists, life coaches, and went through different programs. I've taken all that I've learned and put it into my own program called Forged by Fire. If you are interested in having me help you navigate your divorce, please hit my website, risingphoenixdivorcecoach.com. I look forward to working with you.